101.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory,
oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends.
Good morning, welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Levin Miller, that's the voice you're hearing. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I do not know what you do at 11 a.m., but whatever it is you do, I'm happy that you do that do with me. I'm getting right into it this morning because I'm joined very, very few times in talk radio do you get to talk to a guy that sits in more than one capacity, right? So I get to talk to him as a physician, and I also get to talk to him as a politician, and then I kind of get to talk to him as one of the guys that I think has his mind firmly wrapped around most of the issues of the Commonwealth, right? And so Dr. Dwayne Sands joins me in studio this morning. I'm getting right into it. Doc, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing? When's the last time you gave blood?
I'm out of my window now, so 8 weeks. About right. 6 weeks ago, yeah.
I gotta try and join you the next lap.
Yeah, okay. Good. Let's get right into it, Doc. Let's see if we can talk to Dwayne Sands, the politician, for a couple of minutes. Because people want to find out what's happening with that. You've been nominated recently, or since the last time you've been here. How has that been?
Nominated and ratified.
Nominated and ratified.
So the work continues in Elizabeth. Right now, we are completing a major re-electrification campaign.
So when
we stopped counting, we were up to 200 streetlights that were not working.
Okay.
And so we've decided to use our constituency fund to brighten up and lighten up these dark areas in the constituency.
Okay.
And pay for it
okay.
Out of our funds. And it has made a big difference.
Okay. So since the last time you were here, didn't have a nomination, didn't have a ratification. That has since happened. The people around the local community watering hole where I sit at, they said, we want to know how is it that Dr. Dwayne Sands, because I could tell you, all them had said, if Sands ain't taking the vaccine, we ain't taking it. And I'm telling you, you have a whole corridor of people that was with you 100%. The nomination happens, ratification happens, the newspaper says, Sands says, you know what, go take the vaccine. And people want to know how much of that is tied to your political affiliation.
So I got up this morning,
mm-hmm.
and the sun came up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Did the sun come up because I got up?
We don't know.
I put it that it probably was going to come up anyway. And so things happen along parallel paths.
Mm-hmm.
I have been very, very vocal about the issues of COVID from mm-hmm. day one, way
right.
back in January of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I continue to be very vocal. I think it's an important conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the point in time where I felt it was appropriate for me to take the vaccine, and I take care of COVID patients, just before I came here,
mm-hmm.
I was operating on a COVID patient.
Mm.
Last night, I operated on a COVID patient.
Mm.
When I go back to work, I will probably do the same thing again. And so I have two babies in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I have a wife and children and so on and so forth. Bear in mind that my risk is far, far greater than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it appropriate to get the vaccine. But I also think that given the situation in the Bahamas and the implicit risk for all Bahamians, particularly now,
mm-hmm.
that we should all make a serious plan to look at our own individual risk.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that's going to translate into, I am going to get the vaccine. Somebody else say, I'm going to get the vaccine, and so on and so forth.
So what? There are people like myself, Doc, that say, you know, as far as I am aware, internationally, the vaccine is still labeled as an emergency use vaccine. I don't have an emergency. That's the reason I'm not taking the vaccine. There is no emergency. I mean, you know, I've had the opportunity to have my father treated under emergency situations. Under those situations, he was given steroids, which is typically not something they would do. He was hit with electricity, which is not something they would typically do. These were all emergency treatments. I don't have an emergency. I don't need to be airlifted anywhere. There is nothing pressing in my life that takes me outside of the general scope of my ordinary life. It is on that merit alone that I have decided the vaccine at this time is not for me.
And so every single person needs to do that type of self-analysis. And the state ought to be educating and informing and trying to make the case, because ultimately I and we believe that vaccination of a significant percentage of the adult population, and eventually once it's approved, even the pediatric population, is going to be an integral part in stopping this manifestation of the pandemic in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But this is not about, let me put a gun to your head, you could take this vaccine. Mm-hmm. There ought to be a discussion, an explanation, questions answered, explanations given again and again and again, so that we can allay any concerns, you know, that Bill Gates and George Soros trying to sterilize black and brown people, mm-hmm. that this is the New World Order, that they are putting microchips in your body and all of the types of stuff that you're hearing in conspiracy theories, which have a very powerful life. Mm-hmm. That's a far cry different than people that just say, I don't have enough information, or what I have heard doesn't help me to make that step to actually go and do it. Mm-hmm. So in my house, I've been vaccinated. My wife didn't feel that it was time for her to be vaccinated when I got it. Mm-hmm. But she has now changed her mind and has made an appointment to be vaccinated next week.
Mm. What about the politics around it, Doc? What about the people that says they have made it so political, right? It has always been a whether or not you were doing this thing because it was being handled correctly by the administration, whether or not the rollout of the vaccination has been administered properly by the administration. I see the PLP is now calling for increased testing. When I thought that the general message was, you know, let's not really worry about the testing, let's try to get as many people vaccinated, there still seems to be a whole lot of partisanship surrounding the issue of vaccination. How has politics damaged the science around this whole thing?
Badly. Mm. Let me say, Duane Sands does not dance to any drum, okay, when it comes to these types of very important ethical and scientific decisions. Mm-hmm. So politics is not going to interfere with my perception of the facts, mm-hmm. or the evidence or the data, nor will it interfere with my ability or my willingness to share that information with the public. Mm-hmm. Even if it's uncomfortable or awkward, I believe the truth should come out. Mm-hmm. But politics and social media has made a mess of COVID, all things COVID. Mm. Social media in particular, but politics. Let's look at India. Mm-hmm. Modi in India was on a good wicket. If you look at January, their caseload was way, way down. Mm-hmm. And he decided that he was going to seek re-election on the basis of his success with COVID. Mm-hmm. Started having multiple rallies with no masks on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now look at what has happened.
It is firestorm.
It is a tragedy of apocalyptic proportions. Mm-hmm. And so you now have a situation where Indian people are dying at an incredible clip. They're having hundreds of thousands of cases a day. They believe that the official numbers probably underestimate the true scourge of COVID in India by a factor of some 30 times. Mm-hmm. And we are going to be watching, and I'm not trying to put mouth on the Indian people, but we are going to watch tens of thousands of Indians die because of the politicization of COVID. We saw it in the United States. We saw it in Great Britain. It's happening all over the world where the politicians now look at this as a way of demonstrating their political acumen and their ability to make tough decisions and to keep the economy going and to keep people safe, et cetera. And that works fine until it doesn't.
Right.
And then when things go to hell, all of a sudden they start scurrying for cover. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump lost the presidency of the United States in large part because he bungled the COVID management in the United States. Mm. And so this is a big deal. This is the issue of our time.
What about population size, Doc? One of the things for me, and I've read some of the stuff about India. I've even read some of the stuff, for instance, with Jamaica. And I've read some of the stuff about America and their infection rates, right? And my difficulty, the thing that I have a difficulty understanding is, why have we not calculated the fact that, first of all, the Bahamas' population, in my estimation, is a saving grace, right? Like, it's literally only 400,000 of us. And that 400,000 is shared over an archipelago, which means there is no single landmass that holds more than 300,000 people on it. That in itself suggests that we either have enough space or enough room to spread people out in a way that is efficient enough to prevent spread. And I don't know whether or not we factor that in what's going on here in the Bahamas. And I think we continue to respond to COVID like single landmass countries, like places with one saturated area of its population. That's not really our situation on the ground here. But you still see the triggers like the lockdowns. There is rumor in the air now that the prime minister may be considering restrictions in the curfew, although he says he isn't. We know that the prime minister has been sporadic. Have we been approaching this from our own level of uniqueness as a country?
I think we have tried to do so. There is this obligatory tension between mm-hmm. public health and the economy. If you lock people down and separate them more than 6 feet, one from another, the likelihood that you will have any spread of COVID is pretty slim, mm-hmm. but you will also have very little circulating economy.
Right.
And so there's always this effort to strike a balance. And what you have seen has been a return to some sense of normalcy. The revenues are starting to increase. A couple of tourists coming into the country. I think the numbers are 25% of the 2019 numbers. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that people are unemployed, people can't eat, can't pay their rent, can't pay their mortgage, etc. So it is, how do I strike a balance? So I don't believe that there's any cookie cutter formula that applies not just to any country, but to a country with a specific archipelagic land mass and water mass. This is learn as you go. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you make some mistakes, and hopefully you will learn from those mistakes and make corrections. But hopefully you don't make the same mistake over and over and over. Mm-hmm. We are now in the third wave, mm-hmm. and it's bad. It is bad out there. Mm-hmm. There are many, many people presenting to hospital with pulmonary problems, shortness of breath, cough, fever, bad feelings, etc., and many of them have COVID. Right now we have more than 40 people in the hospital, mm-hmm. some of them critical. And some of them will not survive. Mm. That is our reality in the Bahamas today, primarily in New Providence and Grand Bahama, but not only. When we had the first and second wave, we had a certain number of nurses and respiratory therapists and physicians. Now in the third wave, we have lost a significant number of those nurses to retirement and to places elsewhere.
With higher salaries.
With higher salaries and benefits. Mm-hmm. And so you're having to face the same kind of challenge with less. Mm-hmm. So I want you to fight that battle with the dragon,
right.
But I want you to tie one hand behind your back.
Right.
And I ain't gonna give you no sword.
Without no sword, yeah.
Okay? I give you a rock and maybe a little slingshot. Now go kill that dragon. So you cannot make these false equivalents that, hey, we've been here before, we've done this. No, we haven't done this before, because people are now with COVID fatigue. People are now unable to pay their bills, mm-hmm. and they are more desperate. Mm-hmm. And this desperation is approaching a level that we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. So we have to acknowledge, when you look at this event on Friday, I believe it was, mm-hmm. that many of us ain't really checking.
And people are actually prepared to take the risk.
I believe they're prepared to take the risk that they think they have
mm-hmm.
until they get licked down and say that this thing is not as easy as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
And particularly since we believe that there are now variants in the Bahamas, although I can't point to a specific phenotype or phylogenetic type
mm-hmm.
of variant because those test results haven't been done and they're pretty challenging. But we probably have variants in the Bahamas. And so whereas before it was older, sicker, fatter, hypertensive, diabetic, comorbidity type people, now the people getting licked down with COVID in the Bahamas and around the world are young people.
Strapped in young men.
Young men. I saw a young man, a friend of mine at Doctor's Hospital. Shout out to him. Young dude. To look at him, the picture of health.
Mm-hmm.
But he is hospitalized with COVID and not feeling very well.
Mm. So, okay. So now, Doc, we're in the third wave, right? How has our test and adjust strategy been? I mean, there's been, in my mind, so many pieces that are just that have just been left out of the fight. They cannibalized me. They wanted to light me a fire on top of a flagpole when I said that I would take the fight for COVID out of my capital city. People don't agree with that, but I think it's the only thing that makes sense. I think in an archipelago, the best way to keep the engine of the economy running is to keep the metropolis up and running and fight COVID somewhere else. People don't like that idea. I've offered to Chester Cooper the concept that there is a $20 million infrastructure sitting down on a 20-minute flight from New Providence. And when we sold the idea of that facility, we sold the idea, the concept, that this would be a special healthcare unit in the Bahamas. Well, I don't think there's ever going to be a more special healthcare need in the Bahamas than COVID. It's literally 20 minutes outside of the capital city. Have we not activated enough triggers in our fight against COVID? Have we been too mono in our approach towards COVID? And have we continued to fight COVID as if it was just one of the regular goings on in the health profession?
No, I think that there has been a dramatic refocusing of attention with and towards COVID. Because it has sucked up all the oxygen out of the room. It has placed an unprecedented demand in terms of equipment, supplies, manpower, staffing, approach to medical student training, approach to young physician and nursing training, and other categories of staff.
Mm-hmm.
We have commandeered real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors West is now a COVID facility.
Mm-hmm.
The legacy unit at Princess Margaret Hospital, now a COVID facility. The Samaritan's Purse facility on the parking lot at Princess Margaret Hospital mm-hmm. is a COVID facility.
Mm-hmm.
South Beach is now a COVID facility. Grand Bahama has COVID facilities. And so when you look at how much we have refocused our attention, the issue is you're trying again to walk and chew gum at the same time, because you have to do this, but you also have to provide additional care. And you only have certain numbers of certain people. I like to say, if you want to win the high jump, you need one person who can jump 7 foot, not seven people who can jump 1 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you only have two or three or four or five respiratory therapists, okay, then you can't put two of them in Auckland and one of them in Crooked Island and one of them in Long Island and so on and so forth.
Correct.
They need to
be in one place.
In one place.
And why is that?
And because they also take care of people with heart attacks, strokes, cancer, etc.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, they are going to be in Grand Bahama and New Providence. Because when you put them elsewhere, now you can take care of mommy who just came in with a stroke or daddy who just had cancer
mm-hmm.
and so on and so
forth. But what we do know, Doc, is that many of these physicians, I mean, I've had my own physician that has been out of the lineup because of his exposure to COVID. And so some of these physicians we lose anyhow in cycles of 21 days or 14 days to their exposure to COVID.
Right.
And my thing is, I mean, I cannot make it make sense that there is $27 million worth of asset that we cannot add to the fight against COVID. That makes no sense to me.
No, I mean, you see, what becomes very important is that we elevate the ideas and the conversation to look at these crazy ideas. And I say that deliberately
mm-hmm.
because it is those crazy ideas that change the world.
Right.
Fella say, boy, you know, I am going to build computers in my garage. Mm-hmm. No, man, you can't do that.
Right.
Fella say, boy, instead of people going to stores, I am going to have a mail order situation where anything you want to buy, I'm going to Amazon it to you. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. It has changed the world. So when an idea like this comes up, the question is, does it land on fertile ground and given serious consideration? And we are only going to get out of this COVID conundrum by listening to each other, by respecting the comments, suggestions, ideas of each other, because none of us have a monopoly on common sense or brilliant ideas.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were a large part in the implementation of what is now the new product of NHI. I have very intimate knowledge about the way the system works. And I know that there is such a thing as an electronic health record system that has been implemented at the NHI. How have we not factored that into the fight? Whether it would have been for the distribution of vaccination or for mass testing. I don't understand why a system that has over 100 physicians, that has a electronically monitored system, that have more than one location, like, why have we not added that to the fight to either ramp up our testings or to be used in the distribution of vaccinations?
I think we have erred, and perhaps as we evolve, perhaps as we tweak, as we adjust, we incorporate these assets into the fight, because I don't think COVID is going anywhere anytime soon. And even if COVID does go somewhere, COVID cousin, mm-hmm. coming down the pipe.
COVID adjacent, yeah. and you have to factor these things, Doc. And the reason why I say that is because we know that to date, on record, NHI has a guaranteed facilitation by the government of $42 million. And this is in their first trudge. This is like the second or third trudge of millions of dollars. And like I tell people you can spend the money on anything, right? Governments that tell me that they don't have money, I chuckle at them, because governments will find money for anything. The difficulty I continue to have in this fight against COVID is I'm not sure if the money's worth is being seen in the fight. So people are still having to deal with the issue of visas, which I think will be met with some legal pushback once this whole thing settles. And it's because we are requiring visas from our citizens to move through the country that they bear passports for. I'm not really sure how legal that is, right? But we're not hearing that in the fight. And there are people, like yourself, who sit in the legislative capacity that have either no issue with asking its citizens to possess a visa to travel through their country, or who haven't offered enough thought to the debate to figure out a way to do away with this, right? Like, if I drove from, I drove all the way from South Beach, I live at the tail end of New Providence, all the way to this studio, which is two streets away from the next end. No one asked me for a visa. No one stopped me. No one checked me. How do you then justify my cousin coming from Camps Bay Andros needing a visa to come to Nassau, or my cousin from Camp Road needing a visa to go to Camps Bay Andros? It's just not legitimate.
You raise an interesting and valid point, and the consideration to date has been that we look at these island communities as separate entities, and to try and maintain their viral integrity by putting obstacles to movement.
What does that do to civil liberty, though? Because without that, what is mankind?
It definitely impacts civil liberty. There's no question about it. And all of these things will be and should be tested, so that as we move forward, we adjust accordingly. But, you know, decisions get made in the heat of battle. Sometimes the enlisted men think, boy, this don't make no sense. Mm-hmm. But because they are enlisted men and women,
they hold the line.
Duty bound.
They hold the line.
You know, yeah. I need you to hold this hill. Mm-hmm. But what value does this hill have?
Yeah.
I need you to hold this hill.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we held the hill. We lost 40% of our troops. We're going for another hill tomorrow.
Right. I see there's some new information in the news this morning, and I'm just taking you in this direction because I got you here. So I see the headline says vaccines open to Bahamians and permanent residents. Instantly to my mind, that makes no sense. I didn't even need to read the whole story. The headline doesn't make sense. As a physician of, what is it now, 30 years?
Well, a little while, 86, right. 1986, right. Till now.
My mommy did just tell my daddy yes the year before that.
Let me put it to you this way. We find ourselves as pawns in a geopolitical battle of vaccine access.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Tedros, who is the Director General of the WHO, had a beautiful editorial that was published in the New York Times on Sunday, where he lamented the fact that the world has more than enough doses of vaccines,
mm-hmm.
but 82% of the vaccines have been administered in wealthy countries.
Mm.
And some of them have 2 times, 3 times, 4 times the number of doses that they could ever use, but they got them stockpiled.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at poor countries now or developing countries, some of them are yet to start their vaccination programs.
Mm-hmm.
What is my point? My point is that we have access to 130,000 doses of vaccine guaranteed. And of that number, we've gotten some 53,000 doses mm-hmm. in total. My numbers may be a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when we can get the next tranche, although we have been promised that this will happen before the end of May. And so you have to make some awkward, uncomfortable, painful decisions about who gets access.
I think the adjective I like is unethical, though, Doc. I don't know if it is good ethics to say that only citizens and, what is it, legal permanent residents can get. I don't. How ethical
is
that?
I think you have a serious case to be made here, and we make it very clear in public health that all us together in this.
Mm.
The challenge is that people want to get access to vaccines,
mm-hmm.
and there's a limited number to go around. So who do you give first? Is it illegal, immoral, unethical to say that older people get first, or frontline workers get first, or that people that live in nursing homes get first? I realize I'm on a weak leg. But you have to make some tough decisions.
Mm.
And all things being equal,
mm-hmm.
if you get enough, then everybody get. Right. Everybody.
Right.
But if you only get a couple, well, we got to decide we can give the children and the women first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, you can't give children because they're
right.
not
approved. Right. They're not approved. Right. Mm. Okay, so I also see, Doc, that we have raising its head now, as I think is normal, during the month of April, May, and June, Kong poisoning. Nothing from the Department of Health.
Yeah.
Nothing from the Department of Public Health. Nothing from any of the advisory people that ought to be advising.
There's definitely a signal
mm-hmm.
That a significant number of people, more than 10 in the last few days that I am personally aware of, presenting with diarrhea, vomiting, after eating kunk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, public health will have to do their surveillance activity, and hopefully they will give a report as to exactly what's going on, whether there's Vibrio back in the waters again. I hope that the kunk vendors have never stopped washing kunk in fresh water.
Mm.
Because if they're still... If some people who believe that you should only wash kunk...
You gotta wash it in the salt water.
In the salt water.
Yeah.
Well, we know that that is one way to make sure that you get the belly.
What was the... I know you sat in the chair. First of all, how long have you been out of government now?
May the 4th, 2020.
All right. So it's almost a year. Okay. So we know that the last time you sat in the chair and the kunk poisoning thing happened... We know that it was specifically tied to some bacteria. Was that a challenge?
Vibrio parahemolyticus.
And that came from where?
The water. So as it gets warmer,
mm-hmm.
this organism blooms in our water.
Mm-hmm.
There may be reasons why it is blooming more, perhaps with climate change, perhaps with what we have in the water and so on. But If you sample the water, particularly around New Providence, you will find a certain amount of Vibrio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me be clear. We have not documented that there's Vibrio in this particular round of conch poisoning now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it could be a duck.
And the people, and to the people that say things, because this is what I've heard in social media, I just want to either check it or kind of erase it. What about the people that say that there is some exposure to sewer or sewage leakage in and around conch holding facilities?
Yeah, we've heard that over and 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 over. And that has not been documented to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
What has been documented to be an issue is that we have had several bouts of Vibrio blooms in the Bahamas. And there's no reason to believe that we ain't get another bloom now.
Mm. I see that there is something else that's going on that I think is going to meet itself with legal challenge, although it has been headed by a QC, and that is the push of employers to vaccinate employees mandatorily, right? Again, unethical in my mind. I don't ever remember any of my jobs asking me for my polio vaccination or my TB vaccination or any other vaccination that I've ever taken. Yellow fever, chicken pox, I don't remember. MMR, no one ever asks me for any of these things. On what authority, in your mind, as a medical physician, firstly, and then secondly, as a legislator, does anyone have the authority to ask me to present my vaccination?
Let me start with my position, that I think it is indeed unethical.
Mm-hmm.
That it is unreasonable
mm-hmm.
to demand that people have to be vaccinated in order to continue to work in an establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, legally, there are options for new hirees, I am advised.
Uh-huh.
So that if you're not working and you come to apply for a job, right. They could say, well, your
this
hair
is a new policy.
Your hair got to be so short, mm-hmm. you can't wear mini skirts, you can't have no tattoos showing, etc.,
mm-hmm.
and you need to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
But if I've been working here for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, on what basis now?
Mm-hmm.
Because my contract never said.
Never spoke to that, correct.
That I had to be vaccinated. And so I think we are opening up an interesting legal challenge. And it's very, very unfortunate that we are imposing a mandatory vaccination requirement. Now, some people are using inducements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me encourage you to get vaccinated and we can throw you a little blow. We'll give you a couple of days off and give you a little bonus if you do this because we're trying to create a COVID-safe environment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that makes sense. It is very similar to the inducements that the Bahamas is offering for people who have been vaccinated to travel without certain tests being required and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's using a carrot as opposed to a stick.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me see if I can get you back to the way in terms of the politician, right? Because we've been talking to the doctor for quite a while. I see your chairman has recently written quite a lengthy statement to the University of the Bahamas with regards to why the prime minister will not attend a debate. We know that there have been times in your own political career that you've said that if leadership was something that was ever available, Dwayne Sands would offer himself for it. Is that still your position?
Sure.
What then do you imagine would be the hurdle or hurdles in your mind that would keep you away from open public debates?
Well,
do you have a position on open public debates?
I see no problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
You may recall the Elizabeth by-election.
Right, you weren't present then.
You know, the decision was made that I would not debate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, no fisherman ever called his fish stink, but mm-hmm. I don't see how any of those fellas in that debate would have posed a challenge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Be that as it may, that was the decision that was made, and leadership is respected,
mm-hmm.
okay? I think we are moving into a different era,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps debates may become an interesting and important part of the way we adjudicate the candidates for elected office. Mm-hmm. Certain reasonable concerns were raised about the format of the UB. That is, that it was open to all political parties. I don't think that makes any sense. I think that it should be encouraged, and maybe if they tweak the rules, you know, a certain number of persons might be inclined to participate in the debate. But the party has gone on the record and said that based on the way the debate has been formulated, that the Free National Movement is not going to participate.
Here are the reasons they've given Dr. Sands. One, the for-profit media houses aren't all invited. I don't know why the government of the Bahamas or the management of the Free National Movement would be concerned with what for-profit agencies can or cannot do, first of all. Secondly, if we invite the prime minister, he has the arm of state. The arm of state would then set its rules. Why? Because it is the arm of state and it operates on certain protocols. If the prime minister is going to be in attendance, here is what has to follow. They never did that. They then go and give us some left-wing rule out of Jamaica, I think it is, when in actuality, it isn't a rule, it's just a common practice, right? What I want to know from Dwayne Sands is, does it look like kowtowing? Does it look like the whole fish may not be stink, but at least the head maybe is stink over there?
I think what we are watching is the evolution of civil society in the Bahamas. And I think that those persons working on organization of debate should mm-hmm. continue to push for it. And it is likely that in days to come, or in months to come, or in years to come, that it will become a part of the approach to elections in the Bahamas.
Mm.
So, you know, the United States talks about in order to build a more perfect union.
Mm-hmm.
And they acknowledge that they're not perfect. The Bahamas is certainly not a perfect place.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that as we mature politically, that our approach will evolve and include some of these things.
Doc, we go on to a break. I hear the music in my headphones. He's been playing it pretty loud for a pretty long time. Let's go to the break. Dr. Dwayne Sands is here. I'm going to open the phone lines on the next side of the break because I don't want y'all to see I shielding him. So you can give me a call. 323-623-2325-4316-325-4259 when we return.
Now for every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes.
Have an outstanding real property tax bill? Take advantage of our real property tax forgiveness program. Bring your account to zero and receive a 50% discount on your outstanding tax and surcharge past 180 days. Or get a payment plan. Make a 25% deposit on your outstanding tax, receive a 100% waiver on the surcharge, and pay the difference within 36 months, interest-free. Contact the Department of Inland Revenue at 225-5778 or email us at rptforgive@bahamas.gov.ps. Offer ends May 31st.
Meet Jackie. Jackie's a hard worker with a steady income, but she has a personal loan on multiple credit cards to pay off. To keep her account current, Jackie opted for a loan from Fidelity Bank to consolidate her debt into one monthly payment and earn interest on a built-in savings account. Be like Jackie. Call 356-7764 to book a complimentary financial coaching session. Fidelity also offers virtual assistance. Fidelity, we're good for you.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory.
Welcome back. 323-623-2325-4316-325-4259. Dr. Dwayne Sands. He's my guest this morning. We're talking to him both as a physician and then as a politician. We've gone through a gamut of things this morning, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk to him as we approach the final minutes of the show. Where are you on free testing, Dr. Sand?
Well, let's say that I believe it's important that, as with most types of care given in the Bahamas, that those people that cannot afford it ought to have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Isn't it just for the greater good now that we all should have it, though? Should not all men be measured equal in this instance?
I don't think we're testing adequately in the Bahamas, and that's been a position that I've held now for months.
Okay.
If you look at the standard that would outline how well you are testing, the suggestion is that you should have a positivity rate of less than 5% for 3 weeks or longer. That's mm-hmm. been the gold standard, and it's been held up pretty well. If you look at the positivity rate in the Bahamas, it's running between 10% to 20 or 30% consistently, certainly over the last 14 days.
Mm.
And so if we're only doing 300 or 400 or 500 tests, and many of those tests are being done by the private sector, mm-hmm. and oftentimes for people that are traveling or people who don't feel well, then there are a number of people who probably are ill, but they can't come up with $140 or $120 to get an RT-PCR.
How do you then, Doc, and I see the phone lines, I'm coming to them. I have a son. My son is now in public school, and that's because I refuse to pay a private school fee for a child that's in my house using my current, right? He had an outbreak at his school. His school had to be closed. My natural thought as his parent was, well, Jesus, we got to go get the boy tested, right? They say to me, well, you know, there's been an outbreak at his school, but, you know, we just have him on our list of people or our contact tracing list. What do I as a parent do then? Because, I mean, do I go and bear the burden of the cost, or do I demand that the state bears the cost? Because it's the state that told me send the boy to school. And to not do that would put me in, you know, contravention of the law. Where then do I sit as the parent?
You have a decision to make, and ultimate responsibility falls to you as the parent. The challenge is that some parents will be able to afford an antigen test or an RT-PCR, and some parents categorically will not be able to afford it.
Sure.
And so, like with many things in this country, and I've spoken about medical apartheid before, there's a certain number of options available to people with means,
mm-hmm.
and those same options are not available to people without means.
But shouldn't it then be, since my son was exposed in a state-sponsored school, why then is the state not sponsoring the testing for all of the persons
because
exposed
the
in that state
have
space?
The resources.
Hmm.
And bear in mind that you and I are the state.
Hmm.
Or you and I form an integral
the
part of the state.
Of the state.
The
yeah.
state has no intrinsic currency.
Mm.
The state doesn't print money.
Mm.
The state takes money from you and from me and then allocates some to the Department of Public Health, some to the Public Hospital Authority, some to Public Works, some to tourism, national security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
But the state only has $2.2 billion in a good year.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know that this year there is going to be a significant deficit in terms of expenditures versus revenue. And so while it's a good idea that we can expand benefits to include this that hadn't been budgeted for and that hadn't been budgeted for, the truth of the matter is that oftentimes there's no headroom. There's no fiscal headroom to do it.
Let's take this phone call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Good morning, Mr. Miller. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Awesome, man. I see you got the great Dr. Sands on.
Yes.
Question, Dr. Sands.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Oh, good morning.
Good morning. It's 10 minutes to go.
Yes. Listen, are you testing people before you giving them this COVID test or... I mean, the COVID vaccination, or do people just come in willy-nilly and take the vaccination? I mean, and I'm not asking that question simply because, you know, we hear the competent authorities says that once you've taken these vaccinations, that you would be able to sit in restaurants with no mask and, you know, gather, go to bed and all of that stuff with no mask and so forth. But if somebody is asymptomatic and did not have a COVID test, and come and take the vaccine, wouldn't they still have COVID? I mean, because the vaccine does not kill the COVID. So wouldn't you be a vaccinated person who is walking around spreading COVID?
So a very good question. No, people are not tested as a requirement for vaccination. The two things are actually somewhat separate, so that if somebody happens to be COVID positive at the time they take the vaccine, there is probably very little impact on that course of that COVID infection. But they now have the consequence of that COVID infection, that natural immunity that develops, as well as the vaccine-induced immunity. And I want to downplay this whole issue about the benefits of vaccination, at least for now, because while vaccination does protect people from hospitalization and death, you could still get infected with a variant COVID organism. And I would strongly discourage people from believing that just because you got vaccinated and you got your two doses that you can now throw caution to the wind. Because there are documented cases of people who have gotten infected with COVID well after their second dose of the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, as well as the AstraZeneca. And as this thing evolves, bear in mind that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of COVID variants. You know, we learn and everything. We learn and stuff about this every day. So the three pillars, again, vaccination, social distancing, hand washing, et cetera, and then treatment. And each of them is very important. You can't separate one from the other.
So you're saying that the mad dash of the Junkanoo was to go and get vaccinated for the purpose of being able to go into the Junkanoo groups is a farce?
I wouldn't say it's a farce. I think that I would encourage them to go and get vaccinated.
How safe would that make the Junkanoo shack? Would it make it any safer?
It'll make it safer than it would be if they were not vaccinated, but it would not eliminate the risk. So this is relative. If you listen to the CDC guidelines about outdoor activity, you know, it is people that are vaccinated, people wearing masks, and people that are 6 feet apart. And it's you need two of the three. So if you're vaccinated and you are more than 6 feet from the next person,
that won't happen.
Don't wear your mask.
That won't happen.
Okay.
In the Junkanoo Shack.
But if you tied up on top of people, then, you know, you need to be vaccinated and wearing your mask and washing your hands and taking precautions. There is nothing that is absolute.
Let me get a couple of these text messages in. This says, how are you spending constituency funding on fixing streetlights?
How?
Yeah.
What do you mean, how?
They said the constituency funding is not for fixing streetlights. How are you doing it?
It is a capital expenditure. And it is an important requirement for the benefit of all of the constituents. And the BPL doesn't have the means to do it. And so with the permission of the authorities, we are repairing the streetlights.
It's for the greater good. Someone here is asking, I had an aneurysm, but I'm back to normal. Can I take the vaccine?
Yes. Is a simple answer. Bear in mind that every single person has peculiar concerns about their own risk. But in general, the risk with vaccines range anywhere from 1 in 50,000 to 1 in 100,000, maybe even 1 in a million. So it's pretty low risk. And the benefits far outweigh the risk.
This is, good morning, can you ask Doc, why are we as a country allowing fully vaccinated people to travel without a negative test when fully vaccinated people can still transmit?
Again, I think that, this is an issue of balancing important concerns, and that is that there's a public health concern and there's a fiscal or economic concern, and both are important, so that we have to consider that people can eat, that people can have housing, that people can survive. And the push towards getting persons vaccinated and the benefit of having more liberties, I think will encourage more people to get vaccinated.
This says, is it true that the vaccine kills off your natural antibodies, therefore leaving your immune system more vulnerable? Is that the reason people are dying from the vaccines or getting blood clots?
No, that is not the reason. People are getting blood clots because it has been found that there is an antibody that gets created that activates platelet factor 4, mm-hmm. similar to a disease called heparin-induced thrombocytopenia.
Heparin-induced
thrombocytopenia. So what happens is that this antibody turns on mm-hmm. the platelets, mm-hmm. and the platelets clump together. And so the platelet count in the body drops, thrombocytopenia, mm-hmm. And you start to clot, either in arteries or veins. And what's been interesting is that people have been clotting off a big vein in the head called the cavernous sinus, or getting blood clots in their legs, which travel to their lung at a rate of about 1 in 100,000 or thereabout. Mm. So it's not because the body's own natural immunity is impaired. It is due to an unexpected or unforeseen antibody interaction with the platelets in a very small percentage of people who get any of the vaccines, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. And now there's some concern about heart inflammation in a small percentage of people that get the Pfizer vaccine. It's very important for people to understand that any drug, any pharmaceutical that we use has some risk. Mm-hmm. People are used to taking ibuprofen over mm-hmm. the counter. Mm-hmm. And it goes by certain trade names. I won't mention mm-hmm. them. But in the United States alone, some 20,000 people a year die from just taking ibuprofen. Some
People have aspirin allergies.
3,000 people a year die from taking aspirin.
Right.
We've had 5 or 6 or 10 people die from these vaccines, and 1 billion vaccine doses already given.
Well, Doc, I will say this, that then goes back to my argument that we continue to be scared to death over a pandemic that has yet to kill 4 million people in a world of 7.8 billion people, in the same world where car accidents killed something like 70 million people a year. And I mean, I believe COVID is real. I know people that have had COVID. I've seen people been very sick from COVID. As a matter of fact, I continue to believe that I had it in 2019. I think I had the introductory strain of COVID, right?
I believe it.
but you know, that kind of begs the question of whether or not it is a firestorm emergency. But I do have one final question for you. We've got 2 minutes. You watch football any at all?
A little bit, yes.
Do you know what a stiff arm is?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So there's been a national vaccine committee. There's been a health advisory committee. There's the Ministry of Health with a minister who my personal position on him is still unable to be uttered publicly. I've not seen Dwayne Sands added back to this fight, though. You think this is a political stiff arm?
Many people would think many different things about that question. And I'm not sure I'm in a position to answer it.
Dr. Sands, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate you for coming.
It's a pleasure, always. And stay safe and carry on.
All right. Well, I'm Levin Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news and smart talk. So don't move. They've got the news. Everyday women and men become legends. Sense to go against our skin become